This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Jim Gray, 12 Emmy Awards, so he's done it all in this business, and now he has out a new book. It's called Talking to Goats, The Moment You Remember, and the list of people, just a stunning. Muhammad Ali, Jordan, Tiger, Kobe, Phelps, Tyson, LeBron, and Jim joins us now on the show. Jim, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing today?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. You know, in looking through the book and seeing all the people that you've interviewed, I wondered, is there anyone that you've interviewed that you got nervous, that you got a little tongue-tied the first time you spoke with them?
Well, I would say all the world leaders, all the nine presidents, Nelson Mandela and President Gorbachev, because when you have the attention of those people and they're sitting in front of you, it's not necessarily tongue-tied or nervous. It's more that you're really, really aware. Like, I've got this person's time. Don't screw this up. You know, don't you know, go out there and fall on your face. So, you know, you're kind of... It's a heightened awareness. It's much different than sitting in front of Charles Barkley or Dr. J or somebody. It's really such a unique setting, particularly, you know, you're always at a place that they've picked, so it's unfamiliar. I would say that those guys were.
Of all of the people, like, in this book, and obviously you've interviewed so many more than just in this book, what's the proudest interview what's the interview that you are proudest of?
When Mike Tyson bit Evander Holyfield's earlobe and was disqualified, because it was a raw moment, it was a pay-per-view audience, it was volatile. There was a scene in the ring. We'd never seen anything like that before. I haven't seen anything like it since, so I knew it was totally one of a kind, and he was a legend. And so, you know, I was just always, you know, it's really, you know, when you do a broadcast, you look back and you think, I could have done this better, I should have said that. That's one interview where I don't say I stumbled here or I forgot to ask him this or why didn't I follow up there. You know, I got that one right, and I'm just happy that I didn't screw it up, you know, for the people at Showtime, for the audience, and I guess in this instance, most importantly for myself, because I would have never forgiven myself.
You know, Jim, I know you've gotten over the years close with Mike Tyson. In that moment where he was in such a fragile and kind of out-of-control state, at that point, were you already close with him, or were you nervous in that setting in terms of how volatile he was?
No, he'd always been very professional and very courteous and terrific with me, and allowed me to interview him, you know, not only at his best times, but also at his worst times. So I never felt in peril, but it's the only time, Michael and Don and Peter, that I had seen a man, you could actually see the white of a man's skull, the bone of it. And when you look there and you could see how raw and how deep that was, I'd never seen anybody else's skull before, and it hadn't been patched up or sewn up yet. And so when I was looking at this, you know, forget the volatile moment and just the turbulence of that moment and that time. Looking at that was, you know, was beyond grotesque. I mean, it had to be very painful. But no, I've never felt in peril with Mike. I mean, one time, Mike and I write about it in Talking to Goats, Mike threatened to kill me. He said, on the air, live, he threatened to kill me and he threatened to kill Don King. And 45 seconds later, guys, he kissed me on my cheek. And let me tell you, that was far more disturbing.
Now, Jim, what drives you more? The spontaneous interview with, like, no preparation, because you can't imagine that Mike Tyson is going to do what he did, or the maybe the bigger guest, but you have more time to prepare?
Well, I think I like the ability of being able to react to what's gone on live. But, I mean, there's something really special about being able to sit down with, you know, all of these guys and people who've achieved so much and had this excellence in their life and greatness, and be able to really, you know, talk to them for 5 minutes or 15 minutes or an hour or whatever amount of time that you have. So I don't want to say, you know, I'm not trying to hedge here, but there are really advantages and benefits to both.
There's so many things that you cover in this book, and a couple of things I want, you know, I circled, I wanted to ask you. You watched a boxing match with Michael Jackson. What was that like? What was the boxing match, and was he a real fan?
The last question first, no, he was not. I think he became a fan later, and he paid attention to it. When I was there, I was a guest of Stephen Elaine Wynn, and Stephen Elaine had been in Philadelphia, and so they had become very good friends with Julius and Turquoise Irving and from the Golden Nugget Hotel. And so he used to come up to Sixers games when I was working in Philadelphia at the station called Prism, and Chuck Daly was my partner. So I had gotten to know them over the years, and they invited me, not as a working member of the media, but to just come to the fight. Julius is a dear friend of mine. So when I sat down, I sat next down to him, and there were two seats empty next to me. Well, in came Michael Jackson and his bodyguard. And he had a scarf over his face, guys, and he had a blanket on. And about the third round, he tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, Jim, Julius, how many innings are in this game? And so Julius and I started laughing. I mean, you know, we were like had tears coming down, and I explained to him, I said, it's not a game, it's a match. There's no innings, there are rounds. Could be over in the next 10 seconds, or we may have another 10 rounds, so that would be 3 minutes plus a minute in between, another 40 minutes. So from 10 seconds to 40 minutes. Put the thing back over. Okay, thank you. Put the thing back over his face, and he sat there. Fight ends. We all run out. We get about 50 yards. Steve turns around. He says to Julius, where's Michael? Because Julius is obviously so tall, 6'7". He turns around. He said he's still in his seat. So I was by myself without a girlfriend or a wife at the time. And he said, go back and get him. So I went back and got him, and he still had the scarf over his face. He said, is it over now? I said, yeah, Michael, look at the guy. It's done. And so we ran out, and I've never seen so many people in my life. And this was long before cell phones and long before we were all walking around carrying cameras. I've never seen so many people in my life, and I traveled with Ali and been in presence of Jordan and all of these guys. And they were close. But in this moment, coming out of that arena, there were literally people like 30 rows behind that would have like jumped off where they were just trying to get a touch of this guy, wow. Trying to take a photo if they had a camera, trying to shake his hand or just, you know, get to him to say hello. It was phenomenal. Anyway, we went to this back room. He went off in the corner, stood by these three palm trees for about 8 or 10 minutes, walked over, tapped me on the shoulder, tapped Julius. Jim, Julius, I've had such a wonderful time this evening. Thanks so much. And he walked out.
Sounds kind of lonely. A lonely existence.
It was very lonely. It was, you know, he was very pleasant. He was very nice. I was astonished that he knew my name. Obviously, he knew Julius. But somebody must have told him who he was sitting with and or where he was sitting. And that was that. But it was a really unique experience. I mean, the King of Pop, and he was big. He was really something then.
He's in that category, as is Tyson, of like the eternally superstars. Eternally superstars globally, no matter where they go. Is there a difference between the guys of that ilk, the Jordan, Tiger, Kobe, Tyson, MJ, whoever, is there a difference between those guys and the guys even just one level down who are big sports stars but not sort of like these iconic worldly superstars?
I think there's a big difference, guys. I really do. I think that level just below, and you can still be great, but, I mean, they're personified greatness. I think there is a big distinction and difference, and you can just feel it, and you can just... You just know it. You know by the reception that they get where they go. You know by the reverence that the public has for them. You know about the sheer adulation and wanting to, you know, in many instances, the pandemonium that goes on around them that has to be controlled, you know, internally and externally. Internally with their own group of how are we going to travel and move, and externally when they have to be in public. And so, yeah, I think there is. I think there is a big difference, and it's a really interesting observation you made there.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How about Muhammad Ali? You had the final interview with him. I mean, was it at the time that you guys set it up that he said, this is the last interview I'm going to do?
Well, he had Parkinson's, and, you know, he was obviously struggling with speaking. And Muhammad Ali was the first interview I ever got to do. I was 18 years old as a videotape editor in Denver, and they couldn't find anybody, and he was early, so they sent me out to the airport to interview him.
Oh,
man. He gave me 45 minutes, and the first question that I asked him, he said, "You're really doing this interview?" And by him doing that, it allowed me to laugh, and everybody in the room, the entourage, laughed. By the third question, he said, "You sound like the local Howard Cosell." Well, that was the greatest compliment I ever had. So anyway, the interview went well. I came back to the station editing myself out, and the news director said, "You and this tape, we're going to put this on the air. You're barely adequate." So I've been barely adequate ever since. But Ali opened all those doors because Don King and Bob Arum saw it, and they started to hire me and send me to Ali's fights because he wanted to take – he took a liking to me for whatever reason.
Wow.
Took me under his wing. So he would let me come to all of his fights, and we got to travel and go all over. So we ended up having a lifetime relationship, and I called Muhammad Ali. I called Lani Ali, his wife, and I said, "Lani, I'd like to do a show with America's greatest living Olympians, and here's what I'm proposing. We'll take Muhammad, Carl Lewis, the most decorated track and field athlete ever, Mary Lou Retton, who revolutionized women's gymnastics and women's sports in this country by winning the 84 gold medal following Nadia Comaneci and before her Olga Corbett, Ray Leonard, who patterned his whole life, Sugar Ray Leonard, after Muhammad Ali, and let's go up 4 nights before Michael Phelps leaves for the Athens Olympics." And Michael Phelps had not won a single medal then. He had participated in Sydney in the Olympics, and I had interviewed him there when he was 15 years old. So Michael Phelps was reluctant to do it because he didn't feel as though he belonged. Turns out now he's the most decorated Olympian ever, with the most medals ever, plus obviously the most in swimming and golds and so forth. And the very last thing that Ali said on that interview, I said, "Who would you like to fight, champ?" And he pointed and he said, "Me." And then he had a torch. We had these torches brought in, how he had lit the torch in 1996 in Atlanta. We brought these torches in from Athens, and he took the torch in his hands and he stood up and he walked over to Michael Phelps, and his last words on television are, "I'm the greatest. You're the latest. Now it's up to you. Go win all those medals." And he handed him the torch.
These are stories that are throughout this book. The book is so great, Talking to Goats. And I just want to finish with this, Jim. And I've always wanted to ask you this. So sometimes in the car during Monday Night Football, and I hear the halftime show, and you have this interview every week with Tom Brady. And he writes the foreword for your book. All I can think is Tom Brady, the one thing he doesn't have enough time is time. He just doesn't have time. How does Jim Gray get it? There's no way you're paying him enough money to move the needle in his life. Why does he commit to do that weekly thing with you?
You know, I you'd have to ask him that, but if my assessment of it is when I asked him 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, there was really no way for him to communicate to the nation and the public. He wasn't on social media. You know, we hadn't had, you know, we've been doing this for more than a decade, so Twitter wasn't as prevalent, you know, Facebook and all of this, and Tom wasn't in all of that. And he had a local radio show that he would do on the Monday morning with the starting quarterback and the head coach. But that was in Boston. And so I just asked him after both Mike Ditka and Don Shula couldn't do it anymore because of other commitments, and Coach Shula just retired due to age. I just threw it out there one day when I saw him while he was watching his son Jack play tennis, just a total happenstance, expecting a no, and he said yes. And about a week later, he thought about it, and then he wrote me a note, guys, before we started it, a handwritten note. He said, "Thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it. I will give you the same effort on Monday nights that I give my teammates on Sunday afternoons."
Mm. Wow.
That just blew me away, and he has, and he stayed with it. So I guess he just likes doing it, and, you know, I'm grateful to him. I'm honored that he would put his name and humbled that he would put his name on the cover of my book and write that forward. And he's just a fantastic guy. And, look, we're hearing from the greatest quarterback in the history of the National Football League. He's won 6 championships, so to have him be able to answer questions every Monday night in the pregame and halftime is – I think
pretty,
fantastic for all.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, great luck with the book. It's so interesting. The people you've spoken to are the biggest in the world and in and out of sports, and I only wish you great things with the book, Jim, and I thank you for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Don and Peter and Michael. So happy for your success, and I'm a longtime friend of the New York Yankees. I loved Mr. Steinbrenner. George was great to me. There's a great story in Talking to Goats about George Steinbrenner after the Pete Rose interview and Randy Levine and just the whole group out there. Randy's a special guy, and I thank you. Thanks so much, guys.
Of course. Thanks, anytime, Jim. Thank you so much. That's Jim Gray. Talking to Goats is the book. Go out and get it.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.